Like this one. This one's quite fun. Acts chapter 12. We're coming off Acts chapter 11, where we had Peter having to explain his actions because he decided to bust the door open, being the holder of the keys of the kingdom. He also is the one that not just unlocked it at Pentecost or at Samaritans, but even with Cornelius, to unlock the doors of the kingdom to the ends of the earth. He has to give an explanation for that, though, in chapter 11, where the circumcised believers say, "I can't believe you went into the home of a Gentile and ate with them." And he just says, "What do you want me to do? Because this is the way God responded." To which they say, "You're right, let's all praise God and be happy." Then we have the church in Antioch, where we saw at the end of Acts chapter 11, where Barnabas was going after Saul in Tarsus to bring him a part of the missionary journeys that are launching out from Antioch. And we'll see that develop in the next chapter or so. But now we're in chapter 12, and we see a nefarious character enter the scene. It was about this time that King Herod. Who is this King Herod? This is Herod Agrippa. Herod Agrippa. That'd be a good test question. What Herod is the Herod in Acts chapter 12? Herod Antipas? Herod the Tetrarch? Herod Agrippa. And you'll say, "Oh, I know this one because we talked about it." Are you upset because I'm telling you what's going to be the test? I know. It's called education, Micah. This is what happens. All right. Never mind. That's not going to be on the test. I won't talk about the next test until the day before. Is that better for you? Oh, okay. Well, then we'll go by the other. Okay, we'll do that. Okay, King Herod, Herod Agrippa. That's this Herod. This is the grandson of Herod the Great. Herod the Great. Matter of fact, there are three times in the book of Acts where, because of extra-biblical literature, we can point to the exact date when that event is happening. We know that's when it was happening. And this is one of those times. Herod Agrippa, according to Josephus in Antiquities, 19.8.2, in case you care, he died in the fall of AD 44. He died in AD 44, the fall. So around the time period we're living in right now, except for, you know, a couple thousand years ago. Well, not a couple, maybe a couple dozen centuries ago. 1900 years ago. 1970 years ago. What are we talking about? Oh, so more than likely the events that we're dealing with in Acts chapter 12, because we know when he died, and we will see the account of which he dies here. When we know when he died, we know that this probably is occurring in the spring of AD 44. So about 4 or 5 months earlier. But this is the grandson of Herod the Great. His father was murdered when he was 4 years old. And as a result, Herod Agrippa grows up in the custody of Rome. He's taken to Rome. He receives a great education and becomes childhood friends with a man by the name of Caligula. Ever heard of him? Yeah. Caligula ends up being emperor. But when they were growing up, they didn't know that was going to happen. Caligula is the emperor from 37 to 41, which we'll get to that in, well, that'll play implications at some point later. Herod Agrippa, though, was thrown into prison. Sometime after he was growing up in Rome, he was thrown into prison because during the time period he was living there, the emperor was Tiberius. And he was thrown into prison because it was overheard Agrippa talking about that he could not wait until Tiberius would die so that his friend Caligula could become emperor. And you don't get to say stuff about the emperor like that. It's kind of like, you know, calling the White House and talking about, you know, you being excited whenever the president dies. You're going to get dealt with in some way, shape, or form. You know what I mean? I won't talk about that. So while he's in prison, a prophet comes to him. And the prophet tells him this. He says, "You will see two birds in your lifetime, and both of them will be owls. The first time you see this bird, you will be set free from this prison. But the second time you see the bird, you will die." So he's in prison because he said, "I can't wait till my buddy Caligula gets to be emperor, and this guy that's emperor now dies," gets thrown into prison for a long time. Prophet comes to him and says, "You're going to see two birds. They're both going to be owls, but they're going to be at different points in your life. One's going to be really good. It means you get set free. One's going to be really bad. It means you're going to die." And that'll be significant later. Sometime later, though, what did happen is Herod does see an owl while he is in prison, and that's the day that Tiberius dies. Caligula comes to power shortly thereafter, and Herod is released from prison. He ultimately doesn't get promoted to his position until the end of Caligula's reign, which would have been around 40 or 41. So he's been ruling for about 4 years or so at the time that we find Acts chapter 12. What is significant though for us, Herod Agrippa for Christians is significant not because of the way he dies, but because of what he was doing towards the end of his death. Because he starts to develop a reputation of persecuting Christians in a pretty brutal way. And that's what we see right here at the beginning of chapter 12. It was about this time that King Herod arrested some who belonged to the church, intending to persecute them. He had James, the brother of John, put to death with the sword. When he saw that this pleased the Jews, stop right there. What do you notice is weird? Say it again. Please the Jews, that's weird. Kind of. We'll get to that in a minute because we've seen that before. Remind me after we get done talking about this other thing to come back to that point. What else do you see as weird? Say it again. Herod's killing people. Why is that weird?
He is government. He's not Rome.
Yeah, he is the Roman puppet. Technically, you see, King Herod, both Herod the Great and Herod Agrippa, while they were kings of the Jews, none of the Jews really liked him all that much. Which is one of the reasons why he has to please them. We'll get to that more in a minute. Why? Because they weren't full-blooded Jews. They were actually Idumean. They were from way down south in the region of Judea. Not even near the region of Jerusalem. Well, yeah, south of the region of Jerusalem. From Idumea. He wasn't even full-blooded Jew, so they have a hard time with him being their king anyway. What's weird is he's starting to kill Jews, and it's making Jews happy. That's a little weird. What else do you notice is weird? Say it again. Yeah, his goal is to preserve his political position by making the Jews happy, by pleasing them. Because ultimately, all, and this goes for all politicians, they have their power whenever they have the masses on their side. And that's why one of the reasons why politicians, even in our day and age, the way that our politicians rule is by doing this. And whichever ways the winds are blowing, that's the way they go. So he kills James, the brother of John. This is what I find very weird about this section. James, the brother of John. Who is James, the brother of John? An apostle? Tell me more. That's right.
Is it the brother of Jesus?
Nope. That's a different James. We'll see. He's still alive.
He's the one who wrote the book.
He's the one that wrote the book, James. Yeah. Notice this is in 44. This is only maybe 10 years after Jesus died. But who is James? James, he is the apostle. He's one of the inner three, isn't he? Peter, James, and John go on the Mount of Transfiguration. Peter, James, and John go into the room where Jairus' daughter is resurrected. Peter, James, and John are the ones that are following Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, even though they fall asleep. This is that James. This is no small leader. This is one of the inner three. This is one of the sons of thunder. This is the guy that in Luke chapter 5... Luke, his first volume, Luke chapter 5, catches this enormous catch of fish. And then when Jesus comes, follow me, he leaves it in the boat and goes and follows Jesus. That's this James. He is the first recorded apostle that gets killed. The first death of an apostle. What I find strange though is this. Stephen, one of the first deacons of the church, his arrest, persecution, his trial, his death is talked about over a period of a chapter and a half. Chapter and three-fourths, almost two full chapters. The death of the first apostle, summed up in a verse, seven Greek words. And he killed James, brother of Jesus. No, that's not what it says. And he killed James, the brother of John. Put him to death with the sword. And you're going, that's all he gets? That's it? One of the inner three. And that's it. Put to death by a sword paints the picture a little more clearly. What would happen was, and if they put him to death with the sword, is they would bind his hands behind his back, they'd make him bow down, put his head on a stump, and then they would use a sword to hopefully only takes one swipe, but it may take more than one to separate his head from the rest of his body. I mean, notice, hopefully it takes just one. But you may have a guy that's not as strong or a sword that may be a little bit more dull than what you were hoping for. And it could take a couple of hacks before it actually would happen. That's the death of James. And we don't even get it. We don't even get anything. We don't even get to see if his death was paralleling Jesus' like Stephen's. We don't get to see anything. It's just, he's dead. And you're like, okay. But the key is, verse 3. When he saw that this pleased the Jews, he's just like every other politician. How do I keep my power? Oh, I killed this guy because he was just kind of bothering me. But all the Jews loved it. So what else can I do to please the Jews? Because ultimately, them being pleased is what's not only got me my position, it's what's going to keep it. So when he saw this pleased the Jews, he proceeded to seize Peter also. You know what would really please the Jews? Not just if I kill any of the random apostles, but if I kill the biggest mouth of them all. This is the guy that's been causing problems. If I get him dead, I will be king forever in this region. So he seizes Peter. This happened during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. What is that? Passover. See the parallels? A Roman ruler that through the persuasion of the people, the masses, the Jewish masses, seizes someone and is even probably going to kill them around the time of Passover in order to preserve his own position of power. Sound familiar? Who is it? Come on, give me the Sunday school answer. Sounds a lot like Jesus. Jesus. This happened during the Feast of the Unleavened Bread. And the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, Passover is an important time to do something like that. Passover is a time that is celebrating the release from oppression, the release from the Egyptian oppressors, the Exodus. It's a time whenever the hopes of revolution are really high. And whenever the Jewish people are going to be a little bit uncomfortable being under the hegemony, under the ruling of an Idumean. So if he can do something during this time period to get the people on his side, he'll do it, even if it means killing people, whether they're innocent or not. So you see why Passover, even knowing that it's Passover, you got to please the Jews. Otherwise, they may riot and try to overthrow anybody that's over them. Start killing off the heads of this Jewish sect called Christianity, called Christians according to the Antiochians, you might start getting some friends. Verse 4, after arresting him, he put him in prison, handing him over to be guarded by 4 squads of 4 soldiers each. 16 soldiers. Now they wouldn't all be guarding him at the same time. What is it saying though? When are they guarding him? Why does he need 4 squads? Different shifts. You'll have 4 soldiers that are responsible. Then after their shift is over, another 4. After their shift's over, another 4. 4 squads that are constantly rotating to make sure that this guy is secure. Herod intended to bring him out for public trial after the Passover. See, what he wanted to do is he already won some friends during leading up to Passover. And he's saying, okay, after Sabbath at 6 p.m., because that's whenever the Sabbath ends. You know, the day for a Jew begins at 6 a.m., ends at 6 p.m. So the Sabbath begins 6 p.m. the night before on Friday evening, and it stretches to 6 p.m. on Saturday. So after 6 p.m., he's saying, okay, after the Passover, I want to do a trial. But the problem is, in a Jewish court of law, you can't do it at nighttime, which makes Jesus' trial all the more odd. So he wants to do it after Passover. More than likely, he's planning on having this public trial. Public trial. Public. Why is he doing it public? Gain friends. Public trial on the day that Jesus was resurrected. There's some irony there, I think. Hopefully you can appreciate it. So Peter was kept in prison, but the church was earnestly praying to God for him. The night before Herod was about to bring him to trial, on Saturday night, Peter was sleeping between 2 soldiers, bound with 2 chains, and sentries stood at guard at the entrance. Do you know? You see how the 4 guards are set up? He's bound with 2 chains in between 2 of the guards. And then 2 of the guards are also standing at the door. So you have 2 people on the outside protecting the door, 2 people on the inside as well. This guy's not getting away. Right? They're doing whatever they can to make sure this guy is secure. And the night before, what is his possible death? What is Peter doing? He's been in that position before, hasn't he? The night before Jesus' death, what was Peter doing? Sleeping 3 times in the Garden of Gethsemane. 3 times. Remember Peter? He's a 3 guy. 3 times. Why are you guys sleeping? Can't you stay with me up just for an hour to pray? I'm going to go away and pray. And he goes ways and prays and he comes back. And what's he find? They're sleeping. Peter was sleeping in the Garden of Gethsemane originally because of his ignorance. He didn't know what was happening. Peter is sleeping, though, here for a different reason. Because even though it's the day before his death, he's not sleeping out of ignorance. He's sleeping because of his hope and his trust in who Jesus is. See the difference? Peter's in a different place now, even though he's doing the same action. Sometimes the motivation behind your action is more important than the action itself. Peter's sleeping again, just totally chilled, out cold. Verse 7. Suddenly an angel of the Lord appeared, and the light shone on in the cell. He struck Peter on the side and woke him up. Get up! He said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Have you guys started reading Brother Yun's book, Living Water, yet? He's got a story in there that's kind of like this. Pretty crazy. Where he tries to kill himself by not eating for a month and a half. He said, God wouldn't let me die. All the guards were shocked. They're like, why aren't you dying? You're not eating any of the stuff we give. You're not even drinking water. He basically said he was so mad at God because he was in prison for so long. He said, I wanted to die, and God wouldn't let him. And how does that story end for Brother Yun? Basically, the same thing that happens here. So it seems pretty similar. He wakes up, and the door is wide open. Basically, he just walks out of the prison, and then he walks like 5 miles to get back to the place where he's from after not eating for like a month and a half. We have a spirit that's still on the move. We can act like it doesn't happen just because we don't see it. We can believe that Hollywood is the only thing that can do miraculous things because of special effects. Or we can believe that the same spirit that rose Jesus from the dead is still living within us. Theologically, I'm much more comfortable with the latter than I am the former. Quick, get up. He has to wake him up. It's awesome. He said, and the chains fell off Peter's wrists. Then the angel said to him, put on your clothes and your sandals. And Peter did so. Wrap your cloak around you and follow me, the angel told him. Peter followed him out of the prison. Now, real quick, where was Peter? He was sitting where? With chains where? In between two guards. And then on the outside of that door was two more guards. The angel just says, follow me. Okay. Peter followed him out of the prison. But he had no idea that what the angel was doing was really happening. He thought he was seeing a vision. He's like, all right, where's the sheet? Is it going to come down with a bunch of animals on it again? He's like, I got the issue. I went and, you know. He thought he was seeing a vision. He didn't even know this was really happening. You ever done that when you're sleeping? I won't get testimonies for sleepwalkers. Man. That freaks me out. Oh my goodness. I just woke up and I was in another room. You did what now? Peter thinks that's what's happening. He's like, I've done this before. At least this time I'm not on a roof. You know? He starts walking. He thought he'd seen a vision. Verse 10. They passed the first and second guards. He's like, hello, fellas. And came to the iron gate leading to the city. It opened for them by itself. And they went through it. When they had walked the length of one street, suddenly the angel left him. The angel makes the chains drop. He comes, follow me. He's like, hello, guards. The gate opens. That's nice. Walks the street and he's like, hey, friend. And the dude's gone. He's like, oh my gosh, am I sleeping? What's happening? This vision's a little bit weirder than the rest of them. Starting to feel a little more real than what's making me comfortable. Then Peter came to himself and said, oh, now I know without a doubt that the Lord sent his angel and rescued me. He's like, I get it now. Well, that's pretty cool. I didn't really know what was happening. But this is not bad. The Lord sent his angel and rescued me from Herod's clutches and from everything the Jewish people were anticipating. It almost sounds like Peter really didn't know if that was going to happen and probably thought it wasn't. You know? I mean, Peter's sleeping the night before and he's sitting there thinking, oh, this is probably it. We know Peter was married. And I wonder if Peter was thinking, I didn't really get to even say bye to my wife. But he still slept deeply, and the reason why is because he says, but I'll be able to talk to her someday again. As a matter of fact, church history tells us how Peter does eventually die. That Peter eventually dies, they bring him. They bring him and his wife. And they're basically, they say, we've sentenced you to death, to crucifixion. And Peter begs them. He pleads them. He says, please, don't crucify me. Because I don't deserve to die the same way that my Lord died. They said, fine. Then we'll crucify you upside down. And Peter's like, all right, that's cool. And he looked at his wife, and he said three words to her. And they weren't, I love you. He looked at her and he said, remember the Lord. Man, that's tough. And I've talked about this some before, but there's a Keith Green song that plagues me to this day. It's called I Pledge My Head. It's like, I pledge my head to the gospel. And he talks about his life. He's given his life to Jesus. And then the next verse is, I pledge my wife to the gospel, even though she may be beaten and destroyed. I pledge my wife. And then the third verse is, I pledge my son. And the same concept. And I've sat there and I thought, I can say the first verse. But the second and the third is what I have a hard time saying. And Peter may have been sleeping good because he's like, you know what, if I just die, that's fine. But can you imagine going to be crucified upside down and knowing that you're going to be hanging next to your wife? That changes the game. But ultimately, if you do remember the Lord, if you do remember what He did and the hope that we have, and the things that you'll be able to do with your family, the way in which you'll be able to actually protect them by helping them sacrifice themselves, it becomes all clear. We got to be able to trust the Lord in everything, even with the people we love the most. And if you don't, you don't know who He is. You don't just need to remember the Lord then, you need to get to know Him. Remember the Lord. Anyway, that's not what's happening here. He was like, oh, I've been saved from everything the Jewish people were anticipating and the Herod's clutches and God's on the move. Verse 12. When this had dawned on him, when he had come to his senses, when he had kind of woken up and realized he wasn't sleepwalking, he went to the house of Mary, the mother of John, also called Mark, where many people had gathered and were praying. Luke has done this before. What has he done? What am I talking about?
He introduces people.
Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be a major player here in a minute. Or here in a chapter or so. John Mark. The guy who will go with Paul and Barnabas on their first missionary journey. Who will leave them from Pamphylia and go back to Jerusalem as home. Remember, we're in Jerusalem. Who eventually will be the one that causes Paul and Barnabas to split up. That's John Mark. Who also is the writer of the Gospel, Mark. Because, as the story goes, John Mark eventually becomes the amanuensis, the follower of Peter. And when Peter's preaching, John Mark's making notes. And ultimately, whenever Peter's preaching in Rome, the people of Rome ask if John Mark would compose a gospel that would write down the sermons of Peter so that they could preserve it as a living memorial to the apostle. And that's how we got our gospel, according to Eusebius and the other church fathers. That's who this guy is. But right here, he's just introduced in passing. It's kind of like, yeah, you know, and then Barnabas sold everything and gave it away. And you're like, he's like, yeah, we'll talk about him later. And then they laid their cloaks down at the feet of a guy by the name of Saul, but don't worry about him right now. And then there's this guy, it's the house of John Mark. More than likely, what house is this? We're in Jerusalem, where is Peter going? Possibly where they've had the Passover for the last several years in Jerusalem. Maybe even dating back to the Lord's Supper itself. This is probably the upper room where the Lord's Supper happened, where they were praying during the 10 days between Jesus' ascension and Pentecost. John Mark's home. It's one of the reasons why there's an interesting detail in John Mark's Gospel. No other gospel has this, but at the Garden of Gethsemane, wherever, you know, the people come to arrest Jesus, there's a kissing on the cheek, somebody slices off an ear, all those are pretty much details that come across the board. And then all of a sudden he says that then there was a young man that was also in the garden, and whenever they went to snatch him, they pulled away his tunic and he ran away naked. And you're going, what does that have to do with anything? It's possible, more than probable, that John Mark wrote himself into his own gospel. And that this is the way the scene could have happened. They were in the upper room with the Lord's Supper, and he's sitting in the corner listening to Jesus going, oh my goodness, this guy's unbelievable. And as a young kid, they leave the home, and John Mark possibly sneaks out to follow them. He's hanging out in the Garden of Gethsemane while they're praying, and he's just kind of just wants to be near this guy that has just sealed the new covenant. And then John Mark may have looked down and seen this whole band of people coming up to where they're at and wondering what's going to happen. He pulls back into the trees. All of a sudden, he sees what's happening. Jesus is going to be arrested. Peter lashes out, maybe with the sword. John Mark thinks he should spring to action as well. He comes out in the open. Jesus rebukes Peter, and John Mark, though, has been exposed. And as they try to seize the disciples, they grab for John Mark, but he runs away, possibly naked. John Mark's saying, man, I've been there. Maybe that's even the reason why Paul and Barnabas were cool with having him as a part of their missionary journey to begin with. This guy's been there through it all. He's been there through it all. Yes?
Which book? John or?
Gospel of Mark. John Mark. His name is Mark. The book of Mark. Gospel of Mark. Yes. All right. That's John Mark. Yes?
What did you say? Where's the story about him running away naked?
Chapter 15, I believe it is. It's in the Garden of Gethsemane in Mark's Gospel. I should be able to find the passage pretty quickly. Not 15. We're not even there yet. Lord's Supper happens. Gethsemane, chapter 14. It's at the very end of chapter of that part. Verse 51, 14:51, a young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. Weird detail. You're going, where'd that come from? Possibly it's John Mark writing himself into his own gospel. Yes?
So Mark wasn't one of the apostles?
John Mark was not an apostle, absolutely not. No. John Mark was the son of the woman whose home they stayed in the upper room. And possibly at Pentecost, and definitely here. And that's why I think Peter knew what house to go to, because it's the house they've always been at. Make sense? John Mark was not a gospel, or was not a gospel. He was not an apostle. So where did he get his information? From Peter's sermons. Okay, we need to keep moving. So Peter knocked. Wait a minute. John Mark, we're many people who got to pray. Yeah. Peter knocked at the outer entrance. I love this part. And a servant girl named Rhoda came to answer the door. When she recognized Peter's voice, she was so overjoyed, she ran back without opening the door and explained, "Peter's at the door!" Peter's like, "Yeah, I'm at the door! I just escaped prison! You won't let me in! Let me in! Like, what are you doing, little girl?" Like, and then they look at her and they say, "You're out of your mind," they told her. When she kept insisting it was so, they said, "It must be his angel." Where does that come from? Jews believed that each person has their own guardian angel. Their own angel that was assigned to that person. And there's some biblical evidence that could be the case. It is possible, if I can get to my notes where it would be. For example, Matthew chapter 18, verse 10, it mentions that this kind of obscure notation or detail, that children have angels in heaven that are always at the face of the Father, is what it says.
Where is that at?
Matthew chapter 18, verse 10. Psalm chapter 91, verse 11 says, "For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways." Even in Luke 16:22, there's kind of an interesting relationship between angels and a person, where the angels is carrying the body of the beggar Lazarus into paradise. It's kind of an interesting detail. Hebrews 1:14, it says, "Are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation?" Tobit, an intertestamental period document in the Apocrypha, 5:14 through 4 through 16, actually Raphael is sent to aid Tobias in his spiritual quandary with the demon Asmodeus. So there is biblical precedent for that belief. And what they would believe, though, is that when the person died, that the angel then was released from their duties. But if you saw the angel, he would look like the person that he was charged to protect. So more, what they're probably tapping into here is the Jewish tradition that she thinks that she's seen Peter because Peter's probably already dead. And as a result, our prayers have been answered. Not that he was released, but that God's will was done. So what they probably are thinking is this is confirmation that Peter's life is over. Verse 16, but Peter kept on knocking. "Hello, I'm not an angel, I'm a person that could become an angel if you don't hurry up." And when they opened the door and saw him, they were astonished. Oh my goodness, we can't see through him. Peter motioned with his hand for them to be quiet. I mean, you got to picture that moment. They seem like, oh my gosh, it's Peter. There's a whole bunch of people that are praying inside this house. Peter comes. They start freaking out with excitement. He says, loud noises when I've escaped prison in the middle of the night is not a good equation. Shut your mouth. You got to be quiet. Otherwise, we're all in trouble. Because the iron fist of Rome may be coming whenever they find out that I've escaped. Oh, quit squeaking. Okay. Tell James, the brother of Jesus, and the brothers, the apostles, about this, he said, and then he left for another place. He informs them what's happening, and he moves on. In the morning, there was no small commotion among the soldiers. Oh my gosh, what happened to the guy that was sleeping right between us? Oh man, there's a guy. And why would there be no small commotion too for the soldiers? Yeah, you lose, you're prisoner, you receive their punishment. For their guilt is now transferred to you. Because you were in charge of making sure that the verdict was carried out. No small commotion among the soldiers as to what had become of Peter. Seriously, he's just gone. Yes?
Would James have been a leader in the church then if he's mentioned as James and the brothers?
Absolutely. We'll see. Definitely. Matter of fact, James, the brother of Jesus, in a sense right there, is somewhat introduced in passing as well. But he's going to be the major figure in chapter 15, where he's the one that ultimately gives the verdict after hearing Peter's defense case in the circumcision trial. James is the one that calls the shots. Yeah. So more than likely, he is functioning at this point. By 44, he's functioning as one of the key pillars and leaders of the church, which is an incredible transformation in 13 years. Because James is one of the people that wanted to come and take Jesus whenever Jesus was in his ministry, because he said he has gone crazy. And now he's one of the leaders. Alright, where are we at? Somebody help me. Thank you. 19. After Herod had a thorough search made for him, can you find a body? Is it under the bed? Is it under the rock? And did not find him, he cross-examined the guards and ordered that they be executed. Why? Not just because of the guilt, but if you're Herod, why would you want those guards to be executed? Yeah, because you're not going to sit there and think the most logical explanation is that an angel came and set him free. What you're thinking is, there's something happening internal here that someone's not for me. Therefore, all of you will die. That way, we just get rid of the problem. Someone let him out. If you're not going to admit to it, I'll kill all of you. That's what he does. Then Herod, do we have time? 1 minute? No, we'll stop there. All right. I love you guys. See you on Tuesday.